You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio from South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, February 28, 2018.
The board voted to end the contract, and so through the end of this school year, the curriculum department has developed a custom curriculum for social studies K through 5.
Controversial educational material regarding slavery was the subject of last night's Monroe County Community School Corporation board meeting. Coming up later in the program, WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaks with MCCSC spokesman Andrew Clampett about the decision to terminate the contract with the company that produced the material. That's later in the program on today's feature report.
There are more than 7 million fraudulent calls to people in your area code, including a scam threatening to arrest people unless they pay their overdue court fee. Learn about that and other scams on the new edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
A bill that would allow for higher interest rates on payday loans died in the legislature today. House Bill 1319 would have allowed payday lenders to hike their interest rate in the state of Indiana up to 222%. The Indiana Institute for Working Families policy analyst Aaron Macy says a coalition of military veterans and consumer advocates convinced lawmakers to abandon the bill.
So House Bill 1319 very narrowly passed the House. It passed with 53 votes, and it moved to the Senate side, where we were able to take a little more time and sit down with lawmakers to explain what was in the bill, to share our research with them about the problems with high-cost lending. And there really was just no appetite in the Senate to move that bill. So Senator Mark Messmer decided he wasn't going to hear it. So as of tomorrow, Thursday at noon, any bill that didn't receive a hearing will be dead. So HB 1319 will be dead.
Macy says military personnel and veterans are often targeted by payday lenders. Another bill proposed by consumer advocates, Senate Bill 325, would have enforced a cap on payday loan interest rates like those for military personnel.
Early on in the life of payday lending, payday lenders were ringing military bases, and the military was seeing so much fallout from the high-cost debt that they went to Congress and asked for a 36% APR rate cap to protect active-duty military. Now, unfortunately, veterans are not protected by that 36% rate cap. So our veterans groups here in Indiana have been extremely strong partners in seeking a 36% APR cap on payday loans and in fighting any expansion of the payday lending model in Indiana.
Currently, 15 states have a 36% cap on payday lending interest rates. Macy says legislation like House Bill 1319, which would increase the interest rates payday lenders could charge on loans, has been proposed in the Indiana legislature every session over the past 3 years.
Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb is likely to sign a bill which would charge drug dealers with murder if their buyer overdoses. In a statement issued yesterday, the governor's office offered the following statement regarding the passage of House Enrolled Act 1359, quote, "In our state's all-in attack on the opioid epidemic, enforcement plays an important role in decreasing the supply of and the demand for these devastating substances." Holcomb writes, quote, "I commend lawmakers for advancing this bill that sends a clear message to anyone who would profit from the drug crisis. If you deal or make drugs that result in the death of a Hoosier, you will be charged with a felony and go to prison for a very long time. I look forward to signing this bill that is a key part of our comprehensive work to enhance prevention, treatment, and enforcement to curb the opioid epidemic, unquote. Public health policy analysts and addiction advocates believe House-enrolled Act 1359's new penalties is another example of the state trying to arrest its way out of the opioid crisis. Dr. Carrie Lawrence is a visiting scientist at Indiana University and the director of the Rural Center for AIDS and STD Prevention.
I know from the local counties that I work with that, you know, especially talking to some of the criminal justice system partners, that, you know, there's a lot of jail overcrowding going on. Plus, it's a very costly endeavor to some of the counties that don't have a lot of resources to begin with. And I really feel like there are much more cost-effective and evidence-based approaches to this rather than just through the criminal justice system.
Dr. Lawrence says House-enrolled Act 1359, targeting of drug dealers and users, may actually make the state's opioid crisis worse by making people afraid to call in overdoses.
Actually, the worst thing that could happen from a public health standpoint, because it's not how it's going to improve health outcomes. I am not aware of any evidence that points to that. I think if anything, we may, because we don't have a comprehensive Good Samaritan law yet that kind of actually alleviates some of the fears that we already, that drug users already have as far as, you know, administering naloxone and then waiting until EMS gets there because of their fear of arrest. I think this is just going to maybe exacerbate that issue.
House-enrolled Act 1359 was returned to the Indiana House of Representatives from the Indiana Senate today. Governor Holcomb is expected to sign the bill, which would charge drug dealers with murder if their buyer overdoses, into the law within the week. The Monroe County Health Department has received $2,500 to bolster its local medical reserve corps. The grant comes from the National Association of County and City Health Officials. Monroe County Health Administrator Penny Caudill says the corp supports the work of the local health officials in emergencies. For example, she says the corps members were involved with recent flu vaccination efforts in area schools.
But if we have a public health emergency, and a good example in more recent, even with mumps, clinics that we did, or with H1N1, we specifically call out our Medical Reserve Corps when we're doing points of distribution. Sometimes when we've done some drive-through points of distribution with flu shots to test our plans, and we use them as well. So while we do need some medical people, some nurses and things that might help give shots or take care of people that might be sick when they come in, the vast majority of the volunteers are non-medical. So they're people who might help with registration. They might help with traffic control. They might help in a variety of other ways. So Medical Reserve Corps is a little misleading, but it is public health volunteers who are willing to roster, do some training so that when we have an event, that we can respond quickly and with people who are trained.
Interested volunteers can find more information at the County Health Department's website.
Graduation rates in the Monroe County Community School System dipped between 2016 and 17. In last night's school board meeting, Assistant Superintendent Dr. Mark K. Winston reported Bloomington High School North dipped a little more than 1 percentage point, but Bloomington High School South slipped more than 2 percentage points. Winston says the drop is largely due to the way the state interprets the MCCSC data. Winston and several other MCCSC officials spent many hours talking to the state education officials over differences in data interpretation.
We petitioned to make some changes and to argue for what we felt was appropriate documentation on behalf of some of our students, and the state didn't necessarily see it the way that we saw it.
Winston says they think MCCSC didn't get credit for all the students it could have. In addition, she says some students were unexpectedly counted against the school system.
And just to give you a concrete example, there are students who may have left the country moved on, and we were able to track down appropriate documentation and provide that, and yet those individual students are listed as dropouts, according to the state, and we don't think that's an accurate representation of what our students are being able to do. And so that's just one small example, but it kind of gives you the idea of the kind of conversations that we've been having.
MCCSC's overall graduation rate is 91.3%. On a positive note, Winston reports the Academy of Science and Entrepreneurship has maintained a 100% graduation rate for the past 3 years. The Bloomington Graduation School raised its graduation rate to 44% in 2017. That's up 9 percentage points from the previous year. Winston says graduation rates have dropped statewide. According to her presentation, the state had a graduation rate of 90% in 2014, which dropped to 87% by 2017.
Support for WFHB comes from Cardinal Spirits Distillery, located on the B-Line. Cardinal Spirits has opened a new kitchen featuring local seasonal food made from scratch to complement their craft cocktails. Dinner available Tuesday through Saturday at Cardinal Spirits, 922 South Morton Street. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. Last night, the Monroe County Community School Corporation voted to end a contract with a textbook provider over racist and insensitive content. MCCSC spokesman Andrew Clampett says the issue came to the attention of the administration on February 10th when a parent complained. Clampett speaks with WFHB News Director Wes Martin about the administration's decision to sever ties with the educational contractor here in today's feature report.
It was brought to our attention by a parent that one of the social study weeklies that was sent out contained some pretty offensive material, racist. There were a lot of biases in it, and pretty immediately the curriculum department administration took steps to end our contract with that curriculum provider, pulled all of those materials from the schools, and worked with several of our coaches, literacy coaches and teachers and staff to do a full curriculum audit. And as a result of a lot of those things, you know, it was determined that indeed that vendor wasn't going to move forward and do the right thing. In fact, as Dr. DeMuth stated, both at our curriculum meeting on Monday and at the board meeting last night, they really didn't have a clue as to why or how their material was offensive. And so the Assistant Superintendent of Curriculum Instruction, Dr. Marco Winston, has set up a curriculum team committee that is going to be reviewing these future curriculum decisions and so that we can prevent anything like this from happening in the future.
When exactly was this brought to MCCSC's attention, and what is the name of the provider or the providing company?
So this particular social studies provider provided our K-5 social studies materials, and we are in the midst of the second year of their six-year contract. But that contract ended as of last night's board meeting. The board voted to end the contract. And so through the end of this school year, the curriculum department has developed a custom curriculum for social studies K-5 that is directly from the Indiana Department of Education, using some of the materials that they recommend that you build your into your curriculum. And so there's no lost ground there in terms of social studies K-5. And then moving forward, we'll then this next year replace that social studies curriculum with a more appropriate curriculum.
And Andrew, just to go back, I'm just wondering, when exactly was this brought to the administration's attention?
I think it was in conjunction, I don't know if there were emails sent, but certainly through a series of Facebook posts We became aware of it and worked with the parent/parents that brought it to our attention as we moved forward and corrected this. I want to say it was on, so the original message that I received was on February 10th.
So this is all very recent.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, at the moment that the curriculum department found out about it and the superintendent's office, they were making actions very quickly. You know, calling that vendor, you know, speaking with the CEO of that vendor. And I think I know the week of the 12th, we set up a curriculum meeting for Monday of this week to discuss kind of what happened in whole. You know, how did it happen? You know, what steps were taken? The audit that was done internally in terms of the rest of the K-5 curriculums. But most importantly, how do we prevent it from happening again? The parent that brought it to our attention, we appreciate that. You know, the best thing that we can do from here is learn from our mistake and make absolutely every effort to make sure that it doesn't happen again.
Andrew, what exactly was the objectionable material?
It was racist in nature. I mean, it's called USA Studies Weekly, and it was a very poorly written. There were groups of activities and stories around what it was like being a slave, and you know, riding a boat over, and it just incredibly offensive. I mean, in every possible thought of what slavery was like in the colonies, this Studies Weekly newspaper that was sent home with students was incorrect in every possible capacity.
Does this publisher have any other materials with the school beyond this USA Studies Weekly?
No.
Okay.
You know, I think the very large success that came out of this was, you know, the parent that brought this to our attention, she was concerned. She was, you know, outraged. She was able to bring that to the attention of the curriculum department, our school, the administration, and the administration was able to act quickly through a lot of effort and community participation. And we would certainly encourage folks that have those thoughts that make us aware of them. It's not always known that this is going on, and we certainly wouldn't want someone to be quiet about it.
And Andrew, how did this end up getting on the curriculum for kindergarten through 5 years or fifth grade? How did that get approved, or what does that approval process look like? And is this ultimately the failure?
Right. That's a great question. There's a really long answer to it. And so I'll try to give you the short version of it, because they covered it for about 90 minutes on Monday, and I wouldn't do it justice in one answer. But the long and short of it is, when you go through a curriculum selection process, the vendor shows you certain materials. And so you're looking at, you know, several of the studies, the activities, the online resources, and how your teachers and staff can be supported by that curriculum vendor as you ultimately teach our children. You're not always shown, you know, 1 to 100, A to Z, everything that's in that curriculum series, if you will. You're looking at an overview, because at the same time you're looking at one, you're looking at multiple. And so you go and you get the best parts of each of those curriculums, and then you choose based on, okay, we know that the curriculum itself will be in this capacity, you know, throughout the curriculum. And so by the time that this was sent home, this was certainly not one of the studies that was reviewed when they were awarded a contract and working with MCCSC. And so, you know, teachers are making their lesson plans. They're kind of looking at the fine details sometimes, and the curriculum department, you know, missed this going home. And certainly every apology was offered up, and every correction is being made to make sure again that this never happens again.
Andrew, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us. I really appreciate you speaking on behalf of the administration.
You bet.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Several times on this program, we've said that scammers and swindlers are a lot more active today than they've ever been before. And it turns out we didn't know the half of it. We're seeing things happening right here in our local area that mirror what's going on all over the country and around the world. Captain Stephen Kellums of the Bloomington Police Department had to put out a special press release recently warning people that somebody has been calling local people claiming to be a lieutenant in the Monroe County Sheriff's Office. This lowlife says you've missed a court appearance and a judge has issued a warrant for your arrest, but he can accept a bond payment that will keep you out of jail. He tells you to go buy a prepaid money card or a gift card and give him the code number. If he calls you, you need to tell him to go to hell and hang up. Captain Kellum says most of these calls come from another country, even though the caller ID may show a local number, and notes that our local police departments don't accept gift cards. Another telephone scam in our state is some creep who calls businesses and claims to be selling time on a local radio station. It was a woman who called a Fort Wayne business. She claimed they're raising money to help find missing children and wanted payment by credit card. Fortunately, the business owner got suspicious, called the station, and found out it's a con game. But these things are the tiny tip of a gigantic iceberg. Internet security firm Symantec reports that last year, 2017, fraudsters took $19.4 billion from suckers in the United States alone. Worldwide, the bad guys stole $172 billion in just 1 year. Increasingly, Symantec found that millennials got scammed more often than any other age group, and the safest generation online were baby boomers. And robocalls from machines using a recording or a computer-generated voice are happening far more than we thought. A website called robocallindex.com collects the stats. And hang on to your hat. Just during January 2018, 2.9 billion robocalls were made to people in the United States. And how many robocalls do you think were made to people in our area code? 812. 7 million in only 1 month, just in our area code. They included travel scams, debt collection swindles, bogus financial offers. Some were even from prison inmates. Please, help spread the word. Tell people who don't hear this, especially older people, when your phone rings, if you don't recognize the number, don't answer. And if you do find yourself listening to a machine or a suspicious caller, hang up. If you want, you can give them a Bronx cheer first, like this. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at wfhb.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@wfhb.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Danny Groff, and Scott Schmatke. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. Recognized among the best newscasts in 2016 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. And stay tuned for the Hijabi Diaries, a new series on WFHB examining the experiences and issues facing Muslim women. The Hijabi Diaries are coming up next right here on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcasts of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.